Hello and welcome to Inside Renewable Energy from renewableenergyaccess.com. This podcast is brought to you by Sharp Solar, world's leading producer of solar cells and modules. For more information, go to solar.sharpusa.com. Sometimes a name says it all. The Institute for Local Self-Reliance has been helping states, regions, and communities move toward energy independence since the early 70s. Due to the organization's recent efforts in Minnesota, the state is committed to a plug-in hybrid state fleet and to building a future for flexible fuel vehicles. We'll hear from Institute for Local Self-Reliance Vice President David Morris, who helped educate the Minnesota legislature on the virtues of alternative fuels. We'll also take a look at what home builders on the U.S. Pacific Coast consider a breakthrough product. Open Energy Corporation's SolarSave roofing membrane appears to represent a new step forward in construction-integrated solar products. The company won a Cool Product Award at the Pacific Coast Builders Conference. For more on these stories and for all your renewable energy news and information, go to renewableenergyaccess.com. Now for the news. Investor-owned utilities in California are legally obligated to get 20% of the power they sell to consumers from renewable sources by 2010. And all kinds of clean energy megawatts are due online in the coming years. Integrating these renewables into the power grid, however, will take some doing. And that's where the California Independent System Operator Corporation, or ISO, comes in. Their job is to figure out how to funnel the new solar, wind, and geothermal power into existing systems. And they've come up with a four-point plan on how to do it. In order to meet California's aggressive RPS of 33% by 2020, the ISO is focusing on transmission upgrades, market integration, operation tools, and updating the participating intermittent resource program. The European Science Foundation recently invited a diverse group of scientists to a meeting in Germany. The goal was as straightforward as it was ambitious: to find a long-term sustainable solution to the world's energy needs. According to this collection of experts, the 28-plus terawatts of power the world will demand by 2050 can best be generated by the sun. Full-scale solar energy may be the answer, but there are many questions on how to harness enough sunlight to replace the massive amount of energy currently generated by fossil fuels. The next step for the scientists is theoretical: to find ways to duplicate the phenomenon of photosynthesis so that solar energy can be converted directly into fuels. Chevron Corporation is upping its commitment to renewable energy. In partnership with the Georgia Institute of Technology, the oil giant is putting up $12 million of R&D funding to find and refine cellulosic and hydrogen transportation fuels. The five-year research project is aimed at developing commercially viable processes for the production of fuels from forest products and agricultural waste, which is a step beyond established corn, sugarcane, and soybean biofuels. There will also be a search for high-purity hydrogen. Producing commercial volumes of cellulosic biofuels and hydrogen from biomass is the long-term objective. In addition to the R&D, Chevron says it'll spend $400 million toward development of renewable energy technologies in 2006. The Institute for Local Self-Reliance has been around since 1974, and its founding principle, that regions and communities often possess the resources to provide their own power, has led to important victories on the renewable energy and environmental fronts. Lately, that principle has been put to work in Minnesota, where the Institute was instrumental in the passage of the nation's first statewide plug-in hybrid flexible fuel vehicle law. The new law, HF3718, which was signed by Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty in early June, mandates that the state give priority to plug-in hybrids for state vehicles and that it lay the groundwork for the production of flexible fuel vehicles in Minnesota. Institute for Local Self-Reliance Vice President David Morris played a significant role in convincing legislators to pass the bill, testifying as an expert witness before six legislative committees. Here he is with more on why HF 3718 is necessary. Thanks for joining us on Inside Renewable Energy, David. The name of your organization seems to indicate its purpose. Is that the case?
We chose a title that might be unwieldy, but certainly is what we are about. Our focus is on issues of scale and ownership, and our thesis is that virtually all of the world's problems can best be solved from the bottom up, and that communities can be laboratories of change, but they can also generate a significant amount of their wealth internal to themselves. How do you extract the maximum value on a sustainable basis from your local human capital and natural resources?
Is there a backstory to the plug-in hybrid flexible fuel vehicle law?
In the 1980s, we helped Minnesota to change its existing state incentive for ethanol so that instead of its being like the federal government, which is an incentive on increasing consumption, it became a direct payment to producers, which enabled farmer ownership. By 2000, 75% of the then 13 ethanol plants that were in operation in Minnesota were owned by about 25% of Minnesota's full-time grain farmers.
And the background to this new law was a fairly substantial media campaign, as I understand it.
In early 2004, we published a report called A Better Way to Get From Here to There, and it was the first detailed exposition of the strategy of an alcohol-electric transportation vehicle program. It's been downloaded over 30,000 times from our website, so that sort of got the conversation going in a concrete way. And then, of course, in the last 2 years, the idea of a plug-in hybrids has become almost mainstream. In 2005, we published a couple of articles in the Minneapolis Star Tribune arguing that it should be a concept embraced in Minnesota because we have an enormous amount of biofuels and we have an enormous amount of wind power, which is sufficient to provide all the electricity that the electricity side of a dual-fueled vehicle might need. And it interested legislators, and so we designed a bill.
And then you had to convince the legislators, I guess.
I testified 6 times before 6 legislative committees as an expert witness, and there was not one negative comment. There were a lot of educational questions that were posed, but not one negative comment. We have a legislature which is almost 50-50 split between Republicans and Democrats, and yet this bill passed by a unanimous vote.
And what will be the net result of those votes?
Elements of the law are that it puts the state on record as saying that it will purchase plug-in hybrid electric flexible fuel vehicles on a preferred basis and pay it up to a 10% premium for them. Secondly, it will establish a task force made up primarily of business and utilities that will develop a strategy for accelerating both the introduction of plug-in flexible fuel vehicles on the road in Minnesota, but also we hope to produce them. And Minnesota's home right now to the Ford company's Ranger assembly plant, and Ford has announced that it will close that plant in the next year and a half, and we've been working with the UAW at that plant. It's possible that we could see that plant as being the basis for a manufacturing operation for these new vehicles.
So is Ford on board with the potential plan?
Interestingly enough, this bill, as I indicated, passed through with unanimity. There was only one dissenting voice, and that was Ford. They sent an official out from Detroit to tell us that Ford wasn't all that interested in plug-in hybrid electric vehicles. It was really quite remarkable. I was with 2 legislators in a meeting with the Ford representative, and one of the representatives, who's the chief sponsor of the bill, turned to her and said, "I think you're doing a disservice to Ford. I own 2 hybrid cars, and I want something more than that. We know that Ford isn't interested. If you were interested, we wouldn't have to do this bill. What we're trying to tell you is that we, the public, are interested." It was an interesting development, and I don't know that it had any influence, but 45 days later at their annual stockholders meeting, when Bill Ford was asked about plug-ins, he said, and I quote, "Ford Company is keenly interested." And since Ford is coming out next year with its flexible-fueled hybrid Escape, you could add that one more piece to it, and suddenly you have all the pieces we need.
Generally speaking, what does the future of flexible fuel vehicles look like in the U.S. these days?
The automobile companies in the United States have aggressively embraced flexible fuel vehicles. The Japanese companies have not. I mean, Brazil, for example, introduced flexible fuel vehicles in 2003. By middle of 2006, 80% of all new vehicles purchased in Brazil are flexible fuel vehicles. And only this month have Honda and Toyota Toyota announced that they will sell a flexible fueled vehicle in Brazil. They've been innovators when it comes to hybrids, but they're not all that interested in flexible fueled vehicles. And Ford and General Motors, on the other hand, seem to be quite interested in flexible fueled vehicles, but they're not all that interested in hybrids.
Are hybrids more important to the renewable energy cause than flexible fuel vehicles?
The hybrid is what creates the technological platform for this. It's what makes this possible. And if you have a plug-in hybrid, then you overcome the disadvantage of the 100% electric vehicle, which is the expensive batteries and the relatively short driving range. And if you have a electric vehicle with electricity being your primary propulsion, you overcome the limitations of biofuels, which is that there's just not enough of them. Flexible fuel vehicles only cost about $100 additional to the manufacturer. But then you have to find the fuel for it, and we're developing an infrastructure to deliver the fuel, but you know, then you have to find sufficient amount of ethanol, and that requires you to find sufficient amount of plant matter. And our transportation systems are incredibly thirsty. We just don't have the photosynthetic capacity in the world to provide a majority of our liquid transportation fuels.
Now, is there an environmental component to the passage of this new law, fears of global warming, etc.?
Global warming is, the term is anathema on the Republican side of the aisle. Any bill that contains the words greenhouse gases dies in the Minnesota legislature. It was embraced because of oil displacement, and it was also embraced because it makes sense, and it was embraced because of the possibility. You know, you could think about the renewable electricity from wind as a major supplier to the transportation system, and Minnesota has a lot of wind.
Okay, David Morris, well, thanks for your time today, and congratulations on helping to get this thing passed.
Okay, take care.
To learn more about the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, go to ilsr.org. To seamlessly integrate solar cells into building materials, and to do so while maintaining the aesthetic integrity of the building, is an ongoing challenge for the solar industry. Now a California company, Open Energy Corporation, has met that challenge with its SolarSave roofing membrane. SolarSave recently received a 2006 Cool Product Award from the Pacific Coast Builders Conference. According to Open Energy's Norm Dodd, SolarSave is a big step forward in the ongoing quest to make solar power more building-friendly. Welcome to the podcast, Norm. So what do builders find so cool about SolarSave?
It's really taken a lot of the problems of installing traditional modules on top of a roof away. What we're dealing with here is actually a waterproof roof that generates electricity. Some of the advantages of using SolarSave as opposed to traditional solar panels on top of a roof is that it's lightweight. It's only 2.5 pounds per square foot. For using high-efficiency cells, it's generating over 15 watts per square foot of roof space. There's no roof penetrations, so it's really a tremendous application.
And what was the inspiration and the motivation behind SolarSave?
People have been talking about building integrated photovoltaics for quite a while. And when we looked at the marketplace, there really wasn't anything that really stood out as being a tremendous application. So we set a course trying to develop a product. 3 years ago, we brought together some of the world's top photovoltaic experts, as well as individuals who own successful roofing companies, and also Dr. Heshmet Lali, who's a world-renowned roofing expert. And we all met for 5 days, and out popped this design for SolarSave.
I imagine there were some challenges in making solar cells and roofing materials become one.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, I mentioned that we started 3 years ago, and I can tell you that we are just moving to manufacture our finished product. And I think everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. We'll have approval on a finalized product next week.
What were some of the technical challenges?
Each individual material has its own properties and reacts differently during our manufacturing process. So trying to find the right materials was very difficult. It's really a lot like, in a way, baking cookies. You know, you have to have the right temperature at the right time. Understanding what the materials are and then putting that together as a recipe has been quite difficult.
Now, does this recipe have secret ingredients?
Well, I can talk about just some of them, but certainly we're using ETFE, which is a top sheet, which allows heat to dissipate as opposed to using glass. We're using EVA as an adhesive layer, and we're using a specialized semi-rigid layer, which I probably shouldn't talk about.
You think this is going to mean more homeowners embracing solar?
I think homeowners really are looking for aesthetically attractive products to put on their rooftop as opposed to just traditional solar panels. Once the solar industry braces the need for aesthetically attractive and appealing products, I think that's really when homeowners are going to embrace the whole idea of solar. That, and obviously it has to pay out.
Well, thanks a lot for your time today, Norm Dodd. And here's to getting more solar tiles on the roof.
Well, thanks very much, Andy. I really appreciate the time. Bye now.
For more information on the product, go to openenergycorp.com. Hey, we appreciate you taking the time to listen to this week's edition of Inside Renewable Energy, and thanks to our lead sponsor, Sharp Solar. This week's original music was by Mark Scott LaMountain and the Blue Thunder Band. Our news theme music is by the Harry Davison Band. Please send questions or comments to podcast@renewableenergyaccess.com. For more on the stories you heard, and for all your renewable energy news and information, go to renewableenergyaccess.com.